start my timer.
It is 11:09 Wednesday, October 23rd, and this is the in-person interview for Freedom Prep Academy. The board and technical review panel appreciate that you have come today. We understand that the application process requires time and effort and intensive commitment, and we wish to thank you for your interest in providing quality educational choices to the children of Arizona. The purpose of this interview is for the applicant to demonstrate, how well it understands and has thought through the plan presented in the written application. The interview panel will use the responses to the questions to evaluate the capacity of the applicant to successfully implement the plan as outlined in the application. We will start with the introduction of the interview panel. To my right.
My name is Melissa Brown. I work at the New Mexico Public Education Department in the Charter Schools Division, and my job is mostly in training governing board members and schools in how to get through the application process, implementation process, and renewal process.
I'm Judy Thompson. I currently work for the Paradise Valley Unified School District, right up the street. And my expertise and experience has been that I was an education program manager with the Arizona State Board for Charter Schools, and I also have written curriculum for the school district.
My name is Ian Hoder. I'm currently a middle school teacher as well as an instructional coach for 3rd through 8th grade. Most of my years have been teaching and then some administrative work as well.
Okay, and we do have Jessie Berg here. She is a staff member with the State Board of Charter Schools, and she's here for training purposes. I will now go over the details of today's interview. This interview will last 90 minutes. The procedures and ground rules for the interview process are as follows. You will be given a 5-minute introduction time and to make your opening statement at that time. I will cue you when you have 1 minute remaining, if need be. And when the 5 minutes is up and complete, if you're still speaking, you'll just see my hand go up. Hopefully that's not a problem, because it's kind of weird. Expect to spend 2 to 3 minutes on the initial response to each question, allowing time for any follow-up questions made by the interview panel. And feel free to ask any questions for clarification. In order to give you the opportunity to respond to all of our questions, during the response to an individual question, the TRP team lead may ask you to move on and give you the opportunity to address any other responses in your closing statement. When 10 minutes remain in the interview period, you will be asked to make a closing statement of no more than 5 minutes. We will conclude the interview with a description of the next steps to follow. Do you have any questions about the procedures or ground rules?
No, thank you.
Awesome. I will now turn things over to Melissa.
Please introduce your team and include what role each member played in the application process, as well as what role each member intends to have if the charter is approved.
Sure, and I can begin with that, Laura. First off, thank you to the review panel for being a part of this process and your valuable efforts to advancing quality schools in Arizona. So I'll start with my introduction. My name is Sterling Kellis. I'm the founding principal, or one of them, of Freedom Prep Academy, the charter's authorized representative and the primary author of our written application. I'm a fifth generation Arizonan with a background in business, education, and technology. I have 3 postgraduate degrees, an MBA, a Master of Education Administration, and a Master of Information Systems. Before joining FPA, I was the Associate Dean of Technology for the School of Business and College of IS&T at University of Phoenix. In this capacity, I oversaw the academic design, delivery, and accreditation of a portfolio of courses for over 10,000 students. I helped develop curriculum, processes, and teams to advance the education of an additional 160,000 students in 91 campuses and learning centers throughout the country. I taught on-site classes and workshops in information systems, cybersecurity, data science, IoT, virtual reality, and robotics. I assisted with the creation of the college's budget and academic plan and worked with university leadership, instructional designers, and subject matter experts to ensure academic integrity. I served as a corporate liaison between partners and enterprise industry leaders, including Amazon, Adobe, Apple, Google, Microsoft, CompTIA, and LinkedIn Learning. I worked with the North Central Association of Colleges and Schools to ensure compliance with rigorous accreditation standards and help develop and deploy curriculum to serve the needs of degree-seeking students. At the K-12 level, I've served as a board member for Excalibur Charter Schools, an Arizona Title I school serving predominantly at-risk students. I served on the finance committee for Town Meadows Elementary, an A-rated school in Gilbert, and provided tutoring and coaching services for students attending Highland Junior High, Highland High School, and in Guayaquil, Ecuador. With over 15 years' experience in education, administration, and instruction, I look forward to bringing my talent, skills, and expertise to Freedom Prep Academy. My experience with technology-driven instructional strategies, charter school operations, and business management will help guide successful startup and help Freedom Prep Academy carry out its academic, operational, and business plans, with key responsibility of overseeing the business in grades 7 through 12 academic plans. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Laura Oliver. I'm one of the founding school board members, and I am an advisory leader and will serve on the founding school board member for Freedom Prep Academy. I have a Bachelor's of Arts in Education and a Master of Education in Educational Leadership from ASU. I have extensive experience with response to instruction and intervention. I work with mainly pre-K to fifth grade students. My focus is really on integrating behavioral, social, emotional, and academic initiatives. I've brought the Positive Behavioral and Interventions and Supports Initiative to my campus and was one of the leaders of that in my district as well, too. We've developed a model for providing interventions for students at all the tiers, and that is my focus. As a teacher, consultant, coach, and director for early childhood development, I've improved academic outcomes for students, specifically students who have at-risk factors. So in my current role as an instructional coach for the Litchfield Elementary School District, I've developed a lot of different strategies with students, building connections with the community, with families, with students, with other outside resources, bringing them into the schools, and also encouraging families and students to utilize those resources in order to improve their academic outcomes, not just for the students, but for the families as well, too. We have a lot of expertise on our team, and part of my expertise is going to be with the relationships to promote quality classroom instruction, effective professional development strategies, and collaborative coaching opportunities within our prep academy. Thank you.
Now we have a very basic overview of our school, and just in summary, if approved, Freedom Prep Academy will be a K-12 Arizona charter school with an emphasis on classical education, STEM learning, and performing arts. Through a technology-rich learning environment, Freedom Prep will help empower students in and around Mesa, Arizona to better prepare for college, career, and life readiness. Students will enjoy greater freedom and flexibility with options to attend multiple modalities, including on campus, online, or in a hybrid learning environment. Busy students can choose between an AM or a PM schedule. High-performing and struggling students alike will benefit from personalized learning plans adapted to meet their unique interests and needs. Focus tracks, such as performing arts, digital arts, cybersecurity, pre-med, pre-law, environmental science, and business management will allow students to find and pursue their passion. AP courses, dual enrollment, and workforce certificate opportunities will help students earn college credit while still in high school. If approved, Freedom Prep Academy will bring exciting new opportunities to parents and students and relevant 21st century talent to Arizona communities.
Awesome. Right on time.
So, was that your opening statement?
That was.
I believe.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Got right on
that. That was the next thing I was supposed to read. I want to make sure that I got it.
They kind of did the introduction and opening all at once.
Yes. Awesome. All right.
In 5 minutes.
So, perhaps you practice. Anyway, so the first question we have here, Laura speaks a lot to think what maybe you bring to the table. How do you intend to meet the needs of your special education students, both in person and online, within the parameters of your proposed budget?
So, reaching disadvantaged students requires a multi-pronged approach. Typically, disadvantaged students already have barriers built up towards education. They've experienced a lot of what's called traumatic education environments, which lead them to have some resistance towards education. With Freedom Prep Academy, the multi-pronged approach, so they can do a hybrid approach, a completely online approach, or a physical approach, actually being in a classroom, still utilizing technology, but went in that physical classroom with other, you know, students and adults present. So disadvantaged students typically are already behind, far behind where they should be academically. And so it requires a lot of remediation and response to intervention to figure out exactly where they're at and what they need, what missing skills they have, and what they need in order to start filling those gaps so that they can start feeling successful. Students who struggle academically due to history and to lack of resources in their environment need a lot of support. They need a lot of encouragement and belief. Like I said, with my history with social emotional and academics, research has shown that if students are not connected to the other people around them, learning just doesn't happen. Your brain has to be in a particular state of mind in order for learning to occur. And so part of our focus is going to be developing those relationships, believing in our students, trusting in them, and giving them some control over their education. So one of the very interesting aspects of what we're doing is we have multiple types of teachers, but the student is considered one of their own teachers. They're in charge of their learning. So they choose, like Mr. Hillis was saying, they choose a track that they follow. They can choose AM or PM courses. They can choose a combination of online, completely online versus a hybrid between online and physical and then completely physical, whatever fits them. They can switch between those tracks if they find one is not successful for them. So there's a lot of flexibility. They're able to have the flipped environment. So there's that flexibility, that learner being in charge, those connections built with the mentor teachers, the coaches, those who are on site with them as well as online with them, really building those connections and helping them believe. Within our online program, we also have different tracks. So based upon the data that is naturally acquired through the students going through that online program, it puts them in a certain learning track and gives them a master track that they follow that fills in some of those missing skills, those remediation areas that they need in order to help them still achieve mastery of the standards that they should be at. So it helps them to be successful on those smaller levels, but keeps them on that target towards mastery of the standards that they need to master. Did I answer that completely? Is there anything else that you want to hear about that?
So how are you going to follow up with the special education to make sure they are meeting the federal and mandates for that student? And how are you going to assess that? And how, that kind of like, you did a great job as to how you're going to address it in the classroom. How do you address it holistically?
So with IEPs, Individualized Educational Programs, there are legal documents that obviously need to be followed. And so having those IEPs and making sure that we have those goals in place, we need to adapt those goals, modify those goals as needed. But considering that that is a legal document, that is our guide. So if it's already been created, we're going to utilize that as part of each student's individual educational plan, which every student, regardless of whether or not they have an IEP, will have an educational individualized plan. So the IEP is obviously just the more formalized legal document for those students who have identified needs. So that IEP is that guide and that legal document that requires us to ensure that we are accommodating and providing those accommodations that those students need. Now, in creating an IEP or changing an IEP, we're going to look at that data that is collected as students go through the program. So if they're not achieving those goals that are within their IEPs, then we're going to have to come together as a team, an IEP team. That includes the parents, the student, especially at the high school level, the student is part of that team, teachers, mentors, coaches, all of us together coming up with how we need to modify those goals in order to support that student better. Also looking at those goals as far as test taking. There's a lot of different modifications and accommodations with tests. Now, because of the very individualized nature of the program, with it being online and a lot of it being at the student's pace, A lot of those accommodations are already in place, and so it wouldn't be very difficult to have that be part of the student's plan.
What's the oversight look like?
So I can speak briefly to that, Laura, because, we certainly understand the importance of addressing the unique needs of each and every student. One thing that we plan on, because we understand that we have very specific strengths in some areas and in other areas that, that we'll rely on our partnerships. So within our first 2 to 3 years, so years one, two, and three, as outlined in our application, we plan to partner with SPED Solutions. So we'll bring out a partnering agency to be able to assist with that. Now, we've done an extensive demographic analysis of our community, and we've found that it's about on par with Arizona average. The Arizona average is 11.4% of students have some sort of IEP, and we found it's right around the same for our target population. So, in response, we budgeted 11% of our state equalization funds and earmarked those specifically for special education services. And that ensures that each and every student has the support that they need. Now, just as an aside to that, and we'll talk about this in more detail once we get into kind of the curriculum aspect, but our curriculum is uniquely positioned to be able to address some of those needs as far as, as Laura mentioned, the individualized learning plans, the response to intervention for each and every student, and the ability to allow students to kind of manage their own pace. Just one testimonial that I'll address on that. This is a parent who uses the curriculum that we use. He says, my son has a 504 for anxiety and ADHD, but he has not had to use it, again, under this new curriculum program with the ASL's learning program. He goes at his own pace. He keeps up. He no longer feels the pressure of testing, etc. It's been great. No more meds and 504 for my son. So again, while we will focus on the importance of each and every student, I think some of our curricular emphasis will also assist in that as well.
Describe your understanding between formative and summative assessments.
So, yeah, the assessment part of Freedom Prep Academy, we're very excited to integrate that because it has a lot of unique features. But as far as the difference between formative assessment and summative assessment, formative is en route and in progress throughout the learning, essential learning outcomes. And then summative would be at the end of that. So each learning target can have a summative assessment that tests the student on that, but also at the end of the quarter or at the end of the semester or at the end of the year, students will be tested on their summative understanding. So yes, in that regard, we will have formative and summative assessments throughout the quarter, continuous and ongoing, as well as at the very end of the quarter to test a comprehensive understanding within that course or class.
Within each, so there's 9 weeks of instruction. So within each of those, there are opportunities for students to do formative assessments. So within each lesson, there's learning that goes on, and then there's formative questions and opportunities for students to determine, and their teachers who are overseeing them to determine, have they mastered it? Again, it goes back to that track. So if they haven't mastered it, what else do they need to do? What other activities are going to help them to understand it so that they can move on to the next step? Because that's the reason you have formative assessments, is so that you know, as the learner, as the student, and the one who's overseeing the student, you know that that student has been able to integrate that information into them and can then move on to the next step with that information or with those concepts. So that formative assessment is built into the curriculum so that before the student can move on, they have to show that they've understood that material and they're ready to go to the next step. And then of course the summative is at the very end with the usually a deeper depth of knowledge that the student is demonstrating that they not only can recall and that they've retained the information, but that they've now integrated and it's become a part of their paradigm.
Can I follow up to that?
Yes.
Okay. Just a couple, like some clarification from you about one of your particular summative assessments. So this is the instructional analysis grades 6 through 8, and the standard is write a narrative. So then I was looking back at your summative assessment for it, and it's answering 5 questions. But the standard is write a narrative. So I'm wondering if you can clarify the reason for the type of summative when your standard is to write a narrative.
You're thorough. Yes, there will definitely be an opportunity for improvement as far as adhering to that specific standard. As far as summative assessments within each essential learning outcome, so for example, impacting that standard, if it was writing a narrative, then we would have a student write a narrative as opposed to a multiple choice question option. And we're equipped to do that. Students would be writing many narratives throughout the courses.
My question is about the personnel section, so this could be one kind of jumping around a little bit.
Sure.
Please describe, on page 289, under C3, you state that the teachers must have a master's degree. I was wondering if you could describe what you're saying for the requirement of a regular ed teacher to have a master's degree.
As the addendum near the end of each of those, we said that these are our requirements and our preferences. At the same time, school administration can override those requirements if somebody is found to be equipped or competent within that class. So we have a very specific outline as far as our school leadership. We have a 3-person governing board. We have a 5-person school board. We have 4 actual admins that oversee the day-to-day operations. And then beneath those, we have instructional. We have teachers, and we'll go into detail as far as the breakdown of the different teachers. But specifically to that question, if a student did not have a master's degree, they could possibly still be hired. The intent is to find the most qualified and the most capable teachers to be in that classroom environment. We believe that we put together a competitive compensation package to be able to attract that type of talent. We believe that that will serve our students and their best interest. At the same time, we're also willing to make flexible adjustments as necessary. So for example, one thing that I found, and one thing that's included in our application, is we don't necessarily want to constrain our management from only selecting teachers that have a teaching degree. From my experience in reaching out to the community, there are many people who are extremely well qualified to be able to teach subjects, but they never went the formal route of earning their degree. Maybe it's a retiree who has 30 years in finance, but they can't step into a classroom because they don't have that. Our Governor Doug Ducey joked that Sandra O'Connor, who was a former Supreme Court Justice, when she came back to Arizona, she would be unqualified to be able to step into a high school civics class and be able to teach one of those because she didn't have the required teaching credential. So again, with our requirements, we've outlined best practices, at the same time understanding that our leadership team and our management and our school governance can adjust those based off of student need. Of course, everything is rooted in the best possible outcome for our students.
What are the implications for your budget and your business plan if your enrollment does not meet your expectations?
And I can start with that one. So there are a few things that go into that. Of course, we're very aware that one of the reasons that many great charter schools don't perform as well as they'd like to is not necessarily for fault of their academic plan. It's the business operational side of making sure that they attract the requisite students to be able to maintain their operations. So we're very cognizant of that. And in response, we've done a couple things to make sure that we can mitigate that risk. Number one is our first year target enrollment is intentionally placed extremely low. We only have 60 students within the target population. So that's, again, with 7th and 8th graders, we're very confident that we can reach that. We're very connected to the community. We have a large list of families, prospective attendees that are interested in attending. So again, we're confident that we can hit that low enrollment number. But that aside, for whatever reason, if we could not, our model is intentionally set up to be able to make fast adjustments. And the way that is that we have very low fixed costs, and our adjustable variable costs are specifically tied to student enrollment. So if our enrollment comes in below or above what we need to do, we can quickly scale and adjust to be able to meet those needs. And lastly, I would add that we also have reserves. So we have additional funding contingent upon approval of our charter that we'll be able to use. So if we do need to use that in the interim as we're starting to ramp up enrollment, then of course we can as well. Yesterday, we also applied for the charter starter grant to be able to move forward with that. So again, we do have funding sources to be able to help if enrollment is slightly below, but we have accounted for enrollment variability within our model.
Thank you. Do you have any follow-ups?
So how will you ensure that your students, the students in your proposed demographic will have access to MFM in order to fully and effectively participate in your program?
That's a great question. And that's one thing that we thought a lot about. Of course, we want to ensure that we provide equitable opportunities for each and every student who's wanting to attend our school. And at the same time, we understand that we serve a high population of economically disadvantaged students. So to be able to help out with that, we have a few different things that we put into place. Number one is we have extended campus hours. So our campus is open from 7:30 a.m. until 7:30 p.m. We have on-site network support. We have full internet access for any student who wants to be able to attend. So if they don't have internet access at home, which we found that barrier has decreased significantly over just the past few years, but regardless, if that's a challenge to them, they can always use our campus. On top of that, we've also budgeted to provide mobile hotspots to students who demonstrate a financial need. So what that would be is, while we already have a one-to-one student-to-computer ratio, so every single student will have a laptop or a Chromebook that they can take home with them, not leave at school, they'll also be able to, if they demonstrate a need, take a mobile hotspot that they can connect to anytime. We've budgeted for approximately 20% of our student population to take advantage of that. And as I mentioned, if we need to adjust that number up or down, then we're equipped to do that. On top of that, we've made multiple community partnerships where they also offer Wi-Fi within the area. So just to name a couple of those, the Boys and Girls Club, they have after-hour activities for students. So if they finish their shift and they wanted to go down and also connect to the internet, they can do that as well. As well as the YMCA and a few other partners within the community that we'll probably address a bit later in more detail. But all of those go into the aspect that we want to make sure that a lack of funds and resources is not going to be a disadvantage for any of our students who want to attend our campus.
I have a follow-up to that, which might just be my lack of knowledge, but I have a mobile hotspot,
mm-hmm.
and there are places in New Mexico where there is nothing for it to connect to.
Right.
I don't know if your area has that kind of limitation as well in Mesa, that's where you are?
Within the Metro Phoenix area, there are no limitations for the provider that we've looked at. As far as remote areas, as far as attending 100% online, if that's the student's preferred modality, we do have a hardware-software requirement that they would need to adhere to, so they would find out if that's available in their area. At the same time, if there are any external or unique needs, we would work with them, just as Laura mentioned before, with an individualized educational plan. We would find out how we can best accommodate those needs to make sure that they have equitable access to our program.
So with your online, and my follow-up question.
Yes.
So with that online capability of 100% online, so it'd be remotely, I mean, you gave the territory of the area that you're looking to target. I'm not quite sure where I'm going with this. Is there a limit to how far how far are you willing to go out and reach that online student?
That's a great question. And as outlined in the application, we do have a primary and a secondary target population. So our primary is the one that's laid out within the application, and that's 17 12th grade students residing within a 5-mile radius of our target set location at downtown Mesa. Our secondary would be K through 12 students residing anywhere in Arizona. So we've gone through a rigorous AOI or online application process. And to our understanding, we're one of the few that scored a perfect score on that going through that. So we're very excited about that. But they definitely go into detail as far as what's available, what's allowed throughout Arizona. And it's been interesting as we've completed our demographic analysis of community and looked into the different populations, we found that there is robust offerings for students that want to attend a physical brick and mortar, and there's a growing opportunity for students that want to attend online. And then there's a gap in between there as far as providing support in as far as students who want the online flexibility but also want some type of place to be able to go connect, have some oversight. So we're cognizant of that. We made various efforts to be able to help bridge that gap. And we will work with that. But yes, that would be anywhere in Arizona that students could attend for the online instructional component.
So with the height, so your hybrid, so you were looking at, so if they want a place to go to with hybrid, have you reached out? Have you found areas throughout Arizona that would be willing to, or have you thought that process through yet?
So we've made quite a few community partnerships. One of them is with Prenda, which is a very exciting model, which is a startup that provides that kind of home hybrid model, where they call them micro schools or micro sites. And they've grown extremely fast. They've opened 80 microsite schools within the past 8 months, showing that there's a very strong demand for students to be able to have this type of educational offering. But essentially what it is it's an AOI student that's attending online, but then they help facilitate a community of support for students to be able to attend in a physical location, often somebody's home. It ranges from 5 to 15 students that will be able to do that. But again, that's the added support that can exist. So, again, with our intent to be able to work with FRENDA and other community leaders within the area to be able to partner with that, that will also help develop that as well.
Is FRENDA a acronym for something, or is that the, I'm trying to...
FRENDA, I believe, is Spanish for start. Start, to begin.
Thank you.
You're next.
Okay. Six. Thank you. Okay. Okay. So please describe in greater detail the expertise the two principals will bring to ensure success of Freedom Prep in the three areas of the application. So education, operation, business.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure. No, that's a great question. So and we spoke with Rachel about this. Unfortunately, Brent was unable to attend. He was at our meeting yesterday. He was at our AOI meeting. He'll be here again for our formal interview in early December. But unfortunately, he had because he's working full time at a district school, he was unable to attend today. But he brings extensive background in formal education. He's currently a principal for one of the largest high schools in Arizona, Red Mountain High School, and the largest high school to have earned the Distinguished A rating. So he has specific competence in overseeing incoming freshmen. He works with discipline. He oversees over 50 staff members in that capacity. He's a former AP history teacher. So he brings classroom experience, background experience in academia and education. He's worked with online academics as well. And I won't go into too much detail. I'm sure if he were here, he'd be able to explain that in more detail. But speaking for me specifically, like I said, I come from a background of business, education, and technology. And this is just kind of a side note, it was interesting kind of venturing into this arena because I approached it with a business background. And anytime you're stepping into a new business as an entrepreneur, you're kind of trying to answer three basic questions. And those are, what is the product that I'm offering? Who are my customers? And how do I do it better than the competition? So of course, stepping into academia, the logical solution was, well, the product that I'm offering is education. It's education. And then the customer is going to be the student. They're the one that I'm delivering it to. So we began to move forward with that. But I quickly realized that that's actually not the way it is. I needed to zoom out further. And I realized that, no, actually, the product in public education is the student. And I don't mean that in a demeaning or diminutive way. I mean that in an actual accurate way, that they are the good that's delivered to the customer, which is society as a whole. So in public education, it's the retiree living in Mesa's Sunland Village that's paying through property taxes to be able to fund education. It's the small business owner. It's the single parent. So again, kind of going through that process and that background of saying, okay, well, if they're the customer, and the product is a 5-year-old child that we input at this end of the conveyor belt, and 13 years later as an 18-year-old, we want them to have the skill set and the ability to be a competent, functioning adult, how are we doing? So it was interesting to get community feedback on that. And it really brought kind of whether it was talking with Mesa Mayor John Giles and getting his input, or small business owners, it's just been very interesting to be able to kind of get the community engaged and trying to figure out, you know what, no, we want them to have a better understanding of A, B, and C, and maybe less of C, D, and E. So I share that to just kind of share that my background comes from a business environment. I will bring kind of a business mindset into it. I've also worked in higher ed for years. I was a dean for one of the largest universities in the country. In that capacity, I worked with curriculum extensively. I helped write programs for over 10,000 students. I helped oversee curriculum delivery for over another 160,000 students at over 90 learning centers throughout the country. I also taught classes in IoT and robotics and STEM. So I'm very familiar with the technology and the educational component. Again, albeit a bit more on the higher ed. On the K-12 level, I have served as a charter board member, at least for a school board of a small Title I charter school. I've also worked with local district schools. I served on a finance committee. As I mentioned, I'm the primary author of this application. So for the past few years, it's been interesting to kind of look outside the fishbowl into academia and find out, you know, what are the changes that would benefit not only the students, but also the community at large. And it's been an interesting process. So that may be a longer answer than you're looking for.
And I kind of speaking from the other point of view of the other founding principal, Brent Gardner, he and I both come from a long history of insight of education. And so we bring to Freedom Prep Academy the whole, and we've been in public school. I've been in private education as well too. So we bring that background with us in understanding all of the trends and patterns and directions that public education is going through. There's been massive change socially in the last, well, even the last 10 years, 20 years definitely, and even in the past 5 years, we've seen huge changes in family demographics, in family dynamics. With the big economic boom that happened, we've seen huge changes with families and just the traumas that they're going through. And how do you address that as an educational facility? How do you meet all of the needs of not just the students, who are definitely the customers and the families, but of the whole community? One of the reasons I believe that we have such a need for a hybrid type of online but also site-based learning is because so many of our children and families are going through social and emotional and mental issues, whether it be anxiety, depression, all of these other things that come into play when you're talking about education, because education is such a broad umbrella and it encompasses so many different things. So Brent definitely brings that whole background with him, whereas like Sterling was saying, he has much more of the business, higher education type of experience and expertise, and Brent carries much more of that kind of on the ground, ear to the ground, public education, educational system as a whole type of expertise.
So operationally, how is the division of labor for making sure at the state level and federal level that you're meeting all the requirements?
So like many other area charter schools, we have two separate governing boards. We have a corporate board, which oversees the specific affairs of the nonprofit, which has the sole mission of operating this specific charter school. And then we have a school governing board. And beneath each of those boards, we also have, a four-person leadership team that consists of the principal director, the director of operations, the director of communications, and then a registrar or an office manager. So again, it all stems from the organizational mission, vision, and purpose. That's what derives the purpose of the organizational board. And then beneath the organizational board, of course, we have a school board to carry out the day-to-day operations and oversee the performance within the school setting. And then, of course, the school board members will oversee the performance of the directors within the organization. And then the directors will be the key personnel on site each and every day to ensure that that essential learning targets are being met. But this will be, like I said, from the ground all the way delivered back to ensure compliance with state requirements, kind of a multi-tiered system there.
You said beneath the school board, I got lost for a second. Does it beneath the school board are directors?
Correct, yep.
And those directors are on site?
Correct, yep. So a three-person corporate board, a five-person school board, and a four-person director leadership team. And in our three-year organizational plan, that's outlined, so it'll build out into that based off of student enrollment. As I mentioned earlier, it can quickly scale up or down based off of need.
Any follow-ups? Could you please describe more about your professional development plans for both the online teaching and the in-class?
Do you want to start with that? I can start with that if you want.
Go ahead and start, Sterling.
So we certainly understand the importance of having ongoing informative professional development to be able to respond to any needs throughout the year, as well as helping just teachers make sure that they're meeting each of the students' needs. Before we begin the school year, we have 7 marked days of professional development. So that'll be the onboarding. Throughout the school year, we have time set aside, and we have, let me maybe back up as far as giving the holistic approach, we have over 120 hours of professional development, which is about 20% more than the district average. So as I mentioned, you have 7 full days before the school year starts. Every week we have professional development set aside for teachers to be able to receive formal training. And then throughout the year, we have time that breaks out to be able to help with professional development as well. The school day itself, teachers have 90 minutes of prep time every day, which having visited with teachers who are frustrated with the ever-increasing number of hats they have to wear in the classroom and the extremely limited time to be able to accomplish that, that's something that that they're very appreciative of, and that allows them time to be able to reflect and focus on their own targets and any individual student needs. So, for example, in the charter we outline the component of PLCs, how that will be integral in ensuring that professional development advances. We also have, at the end of each quarter, 360 reviews with the teachers. So as Laura mentioned earlier, our 180-day calendar is broken into 4 different quarters, each of 9 weeks. The way instruction works is, for the first 8 weeks, it's direct instruction. And then in the 9th week, that's the sum of, as we talked about earlier, as far as the components that were discussed within the classroom throughout that quarter. And that's the time for students to be able to reach out in the community, as well as be able to complete their summative assessments, be able to finish exhibitions and projects. But it's also a time for the teachers to be able to reflect on whether it was data from throughout that quarter, be able to reflect on their SMART goals that they've set and they're working towards, and also complete those 360 reviews with the on-site principal director. And then based off of feedback from those reviews, they will have targeted performance evaluation that they're working for the following quarter.
So just to step in, just as we believe that the student needs to be in charge of their learning, we also believe that professionals need to be in charge of their learning. A lot of being in a public school district and doing a lot of professional development training with teachers, I find that a frustration that's commonly expressed is that they're having to be trained on things they already know. Or it's something new that's coming around that they knew about 20 years ago. And so there's a really feeling that there's a lack of autonomy and professionalism a lot of times that teachers are feeling. So we truly believe that everyone needs to be in charge of their own learning. So with the professional learning community, we look at the strengths and the skills and the expertise that our teachers are already coming in with and utilize those for them to develop other people's strengths and abilities, as well as reflecting on where they would like to learn more and being able to determine that through their own SMART goals, as Sterling was saying, and then come up with their own learning plan for how they increase professionally. There's almost a week-long PLC conference that comes to Arizona. That would be something that we would definitely encourage our teachers to attend, our staff to attend, as well as many other opportunities. There's so many wonderful professional development opportunities that are available within the Valley for our teachers, and so we would definitely make them aware of those and work with them so that they can attend those and bring that learning back to the rest of the team. That's our true belief as a Freedom Prep Academy, is just that we are all building each other. And it's a constant belief that what you have to offer has value and that you are in charge of your own learning and your own goals, and then also your own reflection. How are you doing towards those goals? Where do you need some support? Where do you need some encouragement or some help? So the true belief where, you know, making a mistake or having a weakness is not an embarrassment, just as we don't want our students to be embarrassed if they're lacking a particular skill or set of knowledge. We want to grow on that and be able to have that openness as a learning community to be able to say, how can we best support each other? So that's really the approach that we're going to take with our professional development, is providing time, opportunities, support, trust, and giving teachers that encouragement to continue their growth and their learning.
Okay, you have a follow-up question with that.
Sure.
So you mentioned that you were working with, for your hybrid model, with Prenda. Okay, so how are you going to incorporate, or have you thought about, the special development of these homes that have would have 5 to 15 students, what would be the professional development for those people that are going to be having those students come in for help, and what does that look like? How is that incorporated with the online?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And one of the intentional strategies that we have was to break up the unnecessarily complex role of the teacher within the classroom. So I'm sure anybody who's been in a classroom before can sympathize with the fact that teachers are becoming increasingly more burdened with whether it's regulatory needs within the classroom, but teachers are expected to be not only a subject matter expert within the content that they teach, but also an expert deliverer of information. In addition to that, to be able to oversee the discipline of the student. On top of that, to be able to reach out to the parents within the community based off of needs. And you go down the list, and it's a lot to manage, especially for the salary that most teachers receive. So we understand that, and we intentionally tried to break up that role of the teacher into four different areas. As outlined in the application, we have four different teachers. We have the student, first and foremost. We want to put them in the driver's seat of their own education. We have a master teacher, we have an instructor, and then we also have a guide or a coach. So specifically what you're referring to there as far as somebody who is in the house, somebody who's in a microsite or within a learning center who's facilitating and helping students, their AOI students, that would be a coach or a guide. And we do have processes in place, and we've explored different solutions that already exist with Prenda to be able to provide ongoing and continuous development for them. Before Prenda became a microschool facilitator, they operated thousands of coding and programming classes out of public libraries. And one of the things that was interesting, and I know the owner of this organization, but speaking with librarians and helping them understand that they were going to provide this free offering of coding and programming classes within the library, one thing that the librarian was very concerned about was, I don't know programming or coding. How will I be able to address this when students have questions? But they were trying to help them understand, what we want you to focus on is just providing the resources, as well as the mentorship and the support, and being able to guide them where they need to go when they do have those questions. And they've taken off. They've done extremely well. And surprisingly, many of the programs that do the best are with libraries that have little to no background in IT. Whereas sometimes the people who are those subject matter experts who understand it, they quickly fade out because they become disinterested or they aren't able to provide the support that's needed to the students. So within the home itself, if it's a coach or a guide, their primary role would be able to provide oversight and assistance to the student. Again, that's not the integral part of our model. Our primary student population will be those students attending within a 5-mile radius of our campus. But we also want to make these solutions available because there's a growing need and want for those students. And yes, we will continue to develop and build out strategies to be able to connect with them. Specifically, we have many different technology mediums to be able to provide remote training and also to be able to help whether it's coaches or mentors or actual instructors continue to develop throughout the school.
What is the most important contribution your proposed school will bring to the community?
That's an interesting question. The most important contribution, because I think that there are many that we can touch on. True to the name, I would say freedom. Less fluff and more freedom. So it's kind of a double entendre there. We want students to have more freedom. So I mean, part of our focal point is to empower learners. Kind of our long mission statements is to provide motivated students the opportunity to achieve academic excellence and develop life skills in a technology-rich, career-focused, and safe learning environment. But that can be summarized into empower learners. And how is it that we do that? We provide them greater freedom and flexibility to be able to pursue what it is that they want. We provide, as we talked about, multiple modalities for students to be able to attend either physically on campus and provide that level of support, to be able to attend 100% online, or also in a hybrid model with some additional support. We will provide two different shifts for students to be able to attend, and we got some great feedback from community members that are very excited about that, who need that type of flexibility. And on top of that, we will provide the freedom for them to kind of direct and be in the driver's seat for their own educational path. We offer, as I mentioned before, seven different, and this may grow based off of community, but seven different focus tracks, ranging from pre-med to pre-law to cybersecurity to digital arts to performing arts. And a student can arrange their electives within their study at the junior high and high school level to develop competency within one of those focus tracks. A student who completes four classes within one of those focus tracks will earn a Freedom Prep Academy minor. A student who completes six credits within that will earn a Freedom Prep Academy major. So with a certificate with that, that empowers the student and helps them understand and develop value early on. Those learning paths for those focus tracks are reverse designed to align with industry standard credentials. So a student can actually earn a certificate and develop workforce competency within the school. So again, going back to the initial question, freedom to be able to pursue their own academic interests in a variety of different ways is perhaps one of the most, if not the most important thing that we will bring to the community. On top of that, we definitely want to help students understand the basic principles of freedom and liberty. And we have a partnership that we're very excited about with Libertas Institute, where we have been able to partner some of their curriculum and their resources for students, where they take some pretty abstract or difficult concepts and they provide them at a K-12 level, very, very young learners. So they take, for example, like Leonard Reed's Eye Pencil, and they put that into a simple coloring book with a lot of graphics to help students understand the benefits of free market economics. And these are principles that shape development throughout the way that we are wanting to introduce at a younger age, of course, within ELA courses. There's flexibility as far as what students are reading, what type of content, and certainly that aligns with our educational philosophy. So freedom and choice, and then also an understanding of freedom and basic principles. Yeah, those are kind of all under that umbrella of us offering freedom.
Okay, so we're going to go back to professional development a little bit. We kind of touched on it a little bit before, but specifically, will there be any PD during which the teacher for the online environment will have a chance to practice teaching and understand what's that going to look like?
So as Sterling was mentioning, within the organization, there are master teachers. And those master teachers are online. So those are people who have achieved that status of delivering content in a way that is accessible to students. So those are the master teachers, and they're expert in their content areas. Now, the teacher who oversees the student learning, because obviously the master teacher is a video recording, or a demonstration, that type of thing that's virtual. So the teacher, the one overseeing, or the coach, as we call it, is the one who is more the guide. So a lot of times in education, especially when we have an area of expertise, we focus more on the expertise rather than the process of learning. So really the coach is there to help the students learn how to learn. Because in order to master any type of content or knowledge or skill set, you have to know how to learn. Once you know that process of how to learn, then that really can facilitate a child opening up every door to any type of subject, because now they have the skill of learning to learn. And so the coach's opportunity is going to be learning how to do that. So there will definitely be professional opportunities for our coaches to work on that, to reflect on how it's going with their individual students, as well as with their group of students. Keeping track of that, how are they doing with that professionally? And so again, it goes back to that professional learning community where teachers have, and everyone involved on that team has the opportunity to talk about how are we doing as a learning community? Are we helping each other learn? And that again, it's very much that back and forth dialogue, not just between teachers and teachers, but student and teacher. How do you feel you are doing as a learner? How do you feel I am doing in guiding you through this process? What more can we do? So really, it's a very dynamic relationship that will progress as it goes along, and then that individual teacher, as they gain knowledge and expertise, will share that with the other coaches and teachers that they're working with, as well as the other students, because again, it's that freedom to be open to new opportunities, as well as open to feedback on how you're doing. And so that's really kind of the way that we're going to go about it, is really develop within and build upon the capacity that's developed.
Can you just talk about for me the online with master teacher, the Samantha group, the picture of this member of teaching? Is that someone in your organization, or is this a group that you're contacting with, or who are these people that are actually teaching with master teacher?
Both. It could be somebody within an organization, or somebody externally that we're finding the content and we're bringing it in. So for example, outlined throughout our application is Acelus. So Acelus has over 165 different classes of master teachers, over 70,000 instructional videos that are all aligned to essential learning outcomes. We will vet those and we will use those and leverage those, but that's not all that we will use. We've also partnered with whether it's Pluralsight or LinkedIn Learning, which each of those have over 6,000 different instructional videos, again, specific to technology. And then internally, we'll create our own videos. Hats off to my wife and my daughters who are working on the computer and building out the curriculum and filling this up. While this interview right here is not really a demonstration capacity of saying, let's actually break open the online classroom and go through that. In some ways, I wish we could, because there is a ton in there that would be super fascinating to go through. That's not really the focus of this. But yes, as far as a master teacher is a subject matter expert who typically provides one-way learning to the student. So they provide the direct instruction as well as the modeling. And then from there, that's, again, using the medium of technology, they can be able to use different resources to be able to assist with that. And we provided some examples in there as far as how Khan Academy can be leveraged to be able to help with that. But then the actual instructor, which probably most closely resembles the physical classroom teacher that we're most familiar with, would be able to intervene and assist as necessary, as well as the coach and guide.
And speaking to that as well, being in public education and seeing the struggle that many of our teachers have, so many teachers are master teachers, but again, they have so many different responsibilities and roles that sometimes they lose sight of that, and their passion tends to start to fade for their profession. And so really understanding that a master teacher has amazing skills, amazing skill set that can be delivered in basic snippets that are aligned to how the brain works and how the brain learns. So we know that the children and even adults can only take in so much information for so much time before they need an opportunity to let that kind of soak in and settle in and do some activities. So the master teaching part of it is very small snippets, and then they have the opportunity to reflect on their learning and kind of let it soak in. And so, again, it kind of allows that master teacher to deliver the content that they're so good at delivering at, and then allowing somebody else to come in and kind of take over that next part of it while the master teacher focuses on their skill set. And so it really, like Sterling was saying, we have a lot of resources, a lot of master teachers who have the ability to do that, but that is lost in translation a lot of times in a schoolroom of 28, 30 students.
And
or more.
And it really does unlock some fascinating opportunities to be able to automate at least that narrow component of the instruction. As in the preparation, as we visited with different principals and administrators, I visited with Gilbert's principal of the year, and he was saying, if I could do one thing that would improve performance, and they were already in grade school, would be if I could just carbon copy or stamp that teacher and put them in every single classroom, that would make a huge difference. And I think that everybody kind of sympathizes with that. Like, if you have your model teacher, if you could just somehow figure out a way to rubber stamp that throughout the process, that would make a huge difference. But even the best teachers, they get sick, they're absent, they have off days. So if you can take the best teachers and then capture their best presentations and then somehow deliver that to each and every student, and then put the student in the driver's seat to be able to control, in line with blended learning, the content, the path, the pace of their learning, then they can control the playback speed, they can can speed it up. If you're an English language learner, they can slow it down. They can pause it. It already has built in, because they're short burst learning strategies, it's about 5 to 10 minute videos per lesson, and then they stop and they pause. And
they can add comments. They can add, you know, different things. They can ask questions to their instructor throughout the video, and the instructor can go back and look at that data and see, you know, were they listening? Did they play on this thing? What comments did they have, and address those? So it's, while it's one way, it's also interactive at the same time.
Yeah, and as Laura pointed out, you can go in there and you can create through Canvas Studio different pause points within the video where it just stops mid-sentence, and then it can ask the student a question. They can respond to a survey, so they can interact with it in a way that wouldn't normally, I mean, at least it'd be prohibitive in a classroom of 30 plus students, where they're all trying to interact. And if you've been in front of a classroom, you've been teaching a group of students, sometimes you don't know, we're just passively sitting there, not absorbing the information, versus the students that are actively engaged. When you ask a question, there's just a couple hands that go up, and the rest continue to just kind of move through. With this one, every single student is reached out to, and then they have to respond to some sort of intervention. And then, of course, like we said, then it passes off a bit more to the actual instructor and then the coaches and guides. So hopefully that provided a little bit of clarity for that.
I do not.
So, kind of in that same vein then, how will your program support, or I have to reword my question. So for your students, once they graduate, and then how are they going to gain access to higher education or further CTE? What kind of support is going to be there for that?
So, as mentioned, the application, our model includes over 16 different AP courses. So students can earn college credits that are approved by the College Board while they're in high school, which can allow them to graduate from high school with an associate's degree. So, and having visited with many university students, they've expressed that the first 2 years of a college is kind of a repeat of a junior and senior year, depending on where they attend. So to be able to graduate saves them a lot of time, a lot of money, and to be able to advance from that. On top of that, we also will help offer CLEP exams. So CLEP exams, again, are tests where you can test out of college credits. And those are accepted at thousands of universities all throughout the country. The majority of them, including Arizona's three state colleges, ASU, U of A, and NAU, University of Phoenix and Grand Canyon University, which are the two large universities. So that helps them earn those credits while they're still in high school. And then, like I said before, students in high school have the opportunity to earn workforce certificates. So we've already begun partnerships with, for example, CompTIA, for a student to be able to earn an A+, a Net Plus, or a Security Plus certificate while they're a high school student. Now when they're graduating, as that 18-year-old output, they aren't just moving into a baseline, low-paying, entry-level job. They have the ability to increase their earning potential, where many of these jobs in IT, entry-level IT, are starting at over $25 an hour. And really, this is something we've examined. With over 15,000 hours spent in a K-12 classroom over the entirety of their 12 and a half years, it really seems like a miss that a student is graduating without some relevant workforce competency. So to address your question, yes, we do have quite a few things in place to be able to help students develop college credits and earn those while they're in high school, as well as develop and earn workforce certificates and competencies.
And speaking to that as well, talking about kind of the conveyor model version of public education, you put in a five-year-old and then you hope at the end you have a productive citizen, at the end. Well, the whole point of education that is sometimes, lost in translation is that this is the development of an individual, a member of society that we want to be able to contribute and feel like a valuable member. A lot of times education has become very passive for our students, and it's just done to them as they process through it. With Freedom Grow Academy, again, they're in charge of their learning. They choose a track to focus on, whether it's pre-med or security, cybersecurity, or whatever area they're most interested in, and they can get a taste of that. And they can see what direction they're going in. And then they also come out of it already knowing how to be a learner and how to be in charge of your learning and your future. Part of it is them making goals and filling those goals versus graduating from, a typical high school and going into college and suddenly the freedom of having classes and nobody really keeping track of you, you feel lost. because you've already been in charge of your life and your education and where you're going, you already have that skill set. So when you leave that environment, you're not falling. You're supported by what you've gained from it already.
And that could be the, going back to the questions first, what is the most important value? It may be right in line with that as far as helping students prepare specifically for college and career readiness. Just to make mention of, as far as another thing that helps them with that, we have a very targeted goal within our community. So when we did our demographic analysis of the community, we found that they are underperforming compared to the state average in some very key areas. So we created a SMART goal of 10-4 freedom, which just stands for the fact that we want to improve 4 key performance indicators by a minimum of 10 percentage points within the first 3 years of operation. And those 4 areas will be the percentage of students passing math, reading, science, standardized exams, and the percentage of students graduating from high school. So our efforts are backwards aligned to that end goal within 3 years, and we have different benchmarks set in place to ensure that students are on track to be able to improve that. It's a significant task, but true to the spirit of charters, we want to improve student performance within the target community. We're confident that we can do it. So part of that is preparing them for college and career, which is a big focus, but also for general life readiness. And we have many, many things within our model to be able to help them throughout that process. Just to make, I guess, a quick comment on that, our core values. I mean, kind of giving the analysis as far as asking community members, what is it that you'd like to see more out of students who graduate? Part of it was, you know, better citizens, people who are more respectful, people who understand their civic duties. And we've broken that down into 10 different core values that we will push throughout all of our curriculum. And those are summarized by the slogans, I am brave and I can focus. And those are just acronyms for I am bold, relevant, agile, valiant, and experiential. And then for focus, I can find success, own responsibility, control my controllables, unleash potential, and simplify. And what we've done is we've taken those 10 core values and we've broken them down across the 10 months throughout the school year so that they are focused on developing and recognizing each core value throughout the year. And these are values that are universally recognized across religions and cultures and demographics as admirable. So we definitely want to instill those throughout the school culture and help students develop those. We partnered with an organization called EPIC, which allows students online to be able to recognize those values and share kudos and points. As they recognize students, they're exemplifying whatever the value is, whether it's embracing relevance, finding new ways or innovative ways of doing something, then they can send a kudosgram online. And there have been many studies how this helps foster positive behavior by focusing on the positives rather than trying to correct the negatives. So yes, there are many different things that we definitely want to help to be able to prepare for college, career readiness, and just life efficiency after high school.
Any follow-ups?
I kind of want to take it a different angle. So in your target population, you talked extensively about community outreach and involvement, and you discussed GoDaddy, University of Phoenix, Envision, Soft, and what you were planning on doing with them, which was, if I'm reading this correctly, is that the students are being offered a tour of the facilities. So what happens, is there something that comes next? And you also talk about the community outreach and involvement in the service, the community service hours that you're requiring. Could you address the business relations that you have, and then talk about community outreach and involvement too?
Yes, definitely. So I mean, that's a very important part of our application package and our model in general. We're unique in the sense that we aren't a large out-of-state charter management organization that's coming in and replicating the model that already exists. We're kind of unique in the fact that we are both from the target population. So we attended school within the target population, we have family within the target population. So we definitely have an invested interest of helping students perform better than they already are. We don't want to see it continue the direction that it's going. The benefit of being from the areas, we have we have a lot of community partnerships that we've already established and others that we are continuing to grow. To your question as far as what's the value or what specifically are students doing, a specific feedback that we have from within the community was to try and create a better simulation of real life scenarios for students. And in many ways, you could probably assess the criticism to general academia that it's not the best simulation of what they're going to experience once they leave the classroom. In many ways, it may be a better pipeline to what they might experience in a prison environment. So we want to get them out of the classroom. We want to kind of break down those four walls and say, let's get you out into the community. We mentioned Keep, which was formerly Infusionsoft. They were recognized as the best small business or medium-sized business in the country. And they've done a great job of kind of blending the fun environment with the software as a service like Focus. So they have things like a half football field within their office. They have a basketball court. They have unlimited all-you-can-eat cereal. So to be able to take students out of the classroom and say, okay, look, is this something that you might be interested in? We have on our advisory team, we have an ER doctor who works with Banner. And he said, you know, it would be great to get students at that stage to come into the hospital and understand, not necessarily from what they see on Netflix, what it's going to be like, but in real life, what they will go into if this is the path that they choose. So we're uniquely equipped to be able to foster some of those community partnerships and get students out of the classroom. As we discussed before, the first 8 weeks are focused on helping students understand the instruction, to go through the kind of the process of what we call the ABCs. So and the C's there are for conquer, collaborate, and create. We also want to build knowledge, and we want to advance prior knowledge. But as they go through those ABCs of learning at the end, we want them to kind of get out of the classroom, put them into the community. And not only that, but we also want to pull in community partnerships inside the classroom. And with technology, we're able to do that. We mentioned that through Microsoft Teams, we're able to do that. I mentioned in the intro statement that I've been able to provide tutoring services to contacts in Ecuador and bilingual, and that's been a fun opportunity to see kind of the life-changing difference to be able to reach out. But also, in the other direction, it's fun to be able to pull in community leaders and business professionals to be able to do Q&As with students through whether it's Big Blue Button, which is integrated in our Canvas learning management system, or through Microsoft Teams, where they can have a lecture and discuss that. So all of those kind of combine to create a community environment where students are, it's a two-way process of reaching out into the community and then also community members stepping into the classroom.
Great.
Can I ask one question before? So in your introduction, you mentioned classical education.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious as to how, so for me hearing all this,
yes,
can you clarify how all of this actually supports classical education or philosophy of classical education?
Yes. So I have a background in philosophy when I intended to go pre-law, and understanding the value of helping students not only understand how to do things, but how to think. Kind of the pedagogical approach of saying, let's understand and help students understand how to think. So that goes into the classical aspect of the trivia of logic, grammar, and rhetoric. And that's more of an emphasis on the K-6 level, where we want to help students really hone and develop those basic formative skills. And then at the higher level, where they can apply that cognitive application in the 7th through 12, that's going to focus a bit more on the STEM learning and the application to the focus tracks.
You now have 5 minutes to make a closing statement to the panel. Board staff will cue you when you have 1 minute remaining, and when you have 5 minutes, and when the 5 minutes is complete, you may begin.
Well, first off, we certainly want to thank you, the review panel, for your time and effort to advance this process and commitment to quality education in Arizona. I think when I looked at the word count for the entire application, it was about 140,000 words, which is longer than any Harry Potter novel. So, and admittedly, not as interesting. So for those who took the time to be able to go through all of these concepts and what's shared in there, hats off to you. That's excellent. And with the addendum of the AOI, it doubles that. So I know that there's a lot of effort, especially coming from out of town. So we're very appreciative of that and the opportunity to be here. This is the culmination of a years-long process. Kind of thinking and reviewing things, visiting multiple site locations and finding out what is it that this target population needs. And we're very excited to bring it into this community, and we're confident that we can. As outlined, I mean, throughout our application and discussed throughout this interview, our aim is to improve student achievement within a population in dire need of intervention, with students performing well below state averages in math, reading, and science, as well as graduation and matriculation rates. We have outlined clear and measurable metrics, such as our 10-4 freedom goal and various college and career readiness plans, to boost student performance within our target population. That said, even more important than our quantitative goals is our qualitative approach to enhancing the learning experience for each and every student. And this is where we excel. Our triad of competent and caring teachers helps ensure no one falls through the cracks. Our flexible schedule, strong community partnerships, and focused learning tracks in business, technology, and the arts help students find and pursue their individual passion. Our core values, personalized learning plans, and technology-rich instructional strategies help students not only become better learners, but better citizens. And our bilingual, experienced local leadership team is uniquely qualified to carry out our educational, operation, and business plans. In summary, we are confident that if our charter is approved, we will bring great value to the Mesa community, new and exciting opportunities to parents and students, and relevant 21st century talent and skills to Arizona. And of course, we hope you agree. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. To conclude the in-person interview, I will describe what will be happening next. The technical review team will evaluate the scores from the review of your written application package, as well as the findings of the interview panel. This will include whether your written application package met the scoring criteria specified in the application and whether the interview panel finds sufficient capacity to operate a charter school. Next, a recommendation report will be submitted to the board staff and will be presented to the board at the December 9th, 2019 meeting. This will be a full-day meeting that will begin at 9 a.m. We anticipate that this will be a long meeting, so please plan for the possibility of your application being considered on December 10th, 2019, if the meeting runs long. If you have any questions about the next step, please contact Rachel Hanna, the board's Assistant Director of Charter Support and Accountability. You have a copy of her card. Once again, the Arizona State Board of Charter Schools, the Technical Review Panel, and board staff would like to thank you for coming in today and for your interest in providing quality educational choice to the children of Arizona. Safe travels.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Do you have Rachel's card?
I do have Rachel's.
Okay, good.
Yes. Rachel has been a huge help throughout the process. She's
she
a lot of knowledge.
Plethora of knowledge, she is.
Very true. Very true. And thank you, teacher.
Yes,
appreciate
thank
it
very much.
Thank you.